The porch door opened on a central hallway that ran from the front of the house to the back, and the whole length of it was now engulfed in flames. To Ralph's eyes, they were a bright green, and when he and Lois passed through them, they were cool. It was like passing through gauzy membranes which had been infused with mentholatum. The crackle of the burning house was muffled. The gunfire had become as faint and unimportant as the sound of thunder to someone who is swimming underwater. And that was what this felt like more than anything, Ralph decided. Being underwater. He and Lois were unseen beings swimming through a river of fire. He pointed to a doorway on the right and looked questioningly at Lois. She nodded. He reached for the knob and grimaced with disgust as his fingers passed right through it. Just as well, of course. If he had actually been able to grab the damn thing, he would have left the top two layers of his fingers hanging off the brass knob in charbroiled strips. "We have to go through it, Ralph." He looked at her assessingly, saw a great deal of fear and worry in her eyes, but no panic, and nodded. They went through the door together, just as the chandelier halfway down the hall fell to the floor with an unmusical crash of glass pendants and iron chain. There was a parlor on the other side, and what they saw there made Ralph's stomach clench in horror. Two women were propped against the wall, below a large poster of Susan Day in jeans and a Western-style shirt. "Don't let 'em call you baby unless you want 'em to treat you like one," the poster advised. Both had been shot in the head at point-blank range. Brains, ragged flaps of scalp, and bits of bone were splattered across the flowered wallpaper, and Susan Day's fancy-stitched cowgirl boots. One of the women had been pregnant. The other had been Gretchen Tilbury. Ralph remembered the day she had come to his house with Helen to warn him and to give him a can of something called Bodyguard. On that day he had thought her beautiful. But of course on that day, her finely made head had still been intact, and half of her pretty blonde hair hadn't been roasted off by a close-range rifle blast. 15 years after she had narrowly escaped being killed by her abusive husband, another man had put a gun to Gretchen Tilbury's head and blown her right out of the world. She would never tell another woman about how she had gotten the scar on her left thigh. For one horrible moment, Ralph thought he was going to faint. He concentrated and pulled himself back by thinking of Lois. Her aura had gone a dark, shocked red. Jagged black lines raced across it and through it. They looked like the EKG readout of someone suffering a fatal heart attack.
"Oh, Ralph. Oh, Ralph, dear God."
Something exploded at the south end of the house with force enough to blow open the door they had just walked through. Ralph guessed it might have been a propane tank or tanks. Not that it mattered much at this point. Flaming scraps of wallpaper came wafting in from the hall, and he saw both the room's curtains and the remaining hair on Gretchen Tilbury's head ripple toward the doorway as the fire sucked the air out of the room to feed itself. How long would it take for the fire to turn the women and children down cellar into crispy critters? Ralph didn't know, and suspected that didn't matter much either. The people trapped down there would be dead of suffocation or smoke inhalation long before they began to burn. Lois was staring at the dead women in horror. Tears slipped down her cheeks. The spectral gray light which rose from the tracks they left behind looked like vapor rising from dry ice. Ralph walked her across the parlor toward the closed double doors on the far side, paused before them long enough to take a deep breath, and put his arm around Lois's waist and stepped into the wood. There was a moment of darkness in which not just his nose, but his entire body seemed suffused with the sweet aroma of sawdust. And then they were in the room beyond, the northernmost room in the house. It had perhaps once been a study, but had since been converted into a group therapy room. In the center, a dozen or so folding chairs had been set up in a circle. The walls were hung with plaques saying things like, "I cannot expect respect from anyone else until I respect myself." On a blackboard at the end of the room, someone had printed, "We are family. I've got all my sisters with me," in capital letters. crouched beside it at one of the east-facing windows that overlooked the porch. Wearing his own Kevlar vest over a Snoopy sweatshirt, Ralph would have recognized anywhere, was Charlie Pickering. "Barbecue all godless women!" he screamed. A bullet whined past his shoulder. Another buried itself in the window frame to his right and flicked a splinter against one of the lenses of his horn-rimmed glasses. The idea that he was being protected returned to Ralph, this time with the force of a conviction.
"Lesbian cookout! Give 'em a taste of their own medicine! Teach 'em how it feels!"
"Stay up, Lois. Right up where you are now. What are you going to do?" "Take care of 'em. Don't kill 'em, Ralph. Please, don't kill 'em." "Why not?" Ralph thought bitterly. "I'd be doing the world a favor." That was undoubtedly true, but this was no time to argue. "All right, I won't kill 'em. Now stay put, Lois. There's too many goddamn bullets flying around for both of us to risk going down." Before she could reply, Ralph concentrated, summoned the blink, and dropped back to the short time level. It happened so fast and hard this time that it left him feeling winded, as if he had jumped out of a second-story window onto a hard patch of concrete. Some of the color drained out of the world, and noise fell in to replace it. The crackle of fire, no longer muffled but sharp and close, the crump of a shotgun blast, the crack of pistol shots fired in rapid succession. The air tasted of soot, and the room was sweltering. Something that sounded like an insect droned past Ralph's ear. He had an idea it was a .45 caliber bug. "Better hurry up, sweetheart," Carolyn advised. "When bullets hit you on this level, they kill you, remember?" He remembered. Ralph ran bent over toward Pickering's turned back. His feet crunched on slivers of glass and scatters of splinters. But Pickering did not turn. In addition to the automatic weapon in his hands, there was a revolver on his hip and a small green duffel bag by his left foot. The bag was unzipped, and Ralph saw a number of wine bottles inside. Their open mouths had been stuffed with wet rags.
"Kill the bitches!"
Pickering screamed, spraying the yard with another burst of fire. He popped the clip and raised his sweatshirt, exposing three or four more tucked under his belt. Ralph reached into the open duffel bag, seized one of the gasoline-filled wine bottles by the neck, and swung it at the side of Pickering's head. As he did, he saw the reason Pickering hadn't heard his approach. The man was wearing shooter's plugs. Before Ralph had time to reflect upon the irony of a man on a suicide mission taking pains to protect his hearing, the bottle shattered against Pickering's temple, dousing him with amber liquid and green glass. He staggered backward, one hand going to his scalp, which was cut open in two places. Blood poured through his long fingers, fingers that should have belonged to a pianist or a painter, Ralph thought, and down his neck. He turned, his eyes wide and shocked beyond the smeary lenses of his spectacles, his hair reaching for the sky and making him look like a cartoon of a man who has just received a huge jolt of electricity.
"You!" he cried. "Devil-sent centurion, godless baby-killer!"
Ralph thought of the two women in the other room and was once more overwhelmed with anger. Except that anger was too mild a word, much too mild. He felt as if his nerves were burning inside his skin. And the thought that drummed at his mind was, one of them was pregnant, so who's the baby-killer? One of them was pregnant, so who's the baby-killer? One of them was pregnant, so who's the baby killer? Another high-caliber bug droned past his face. Ralph didn't notice. Pickering was trying to lift the rifle with which he had undoubtedly killed Gretchen Tilbury and her pregnant friend. Ralph snatched it from his hands and turned it on him. Pickering shrieked with fear. The sound of it maddened Ralph even more, and he forgot the promise he had made to Lois. He raised the rifle, fully meaning to empty it into the man who was now cringing abjectly against the wall. In the heat of the moment, it occurred to neither of them that there was currently no clip in the gun. But before he could pull the trigger, he was distracted by a brilliant swarm of light bleeding into the air beside him. At first it was without shape, a fabulous kaleidoscope whose colors had somehow escaped the tube which was supposed to contain them, and then it took on the form of a woman with a long, gauzy gray ribbon rising from her head. "Don't kill him! Ralph, please, don't kill him!" For a moment he could see the blackboard and read the quote chalked on it right through her. And then the colors became her clothes and hair and skin as she came all the way down. Pickering stared at her in cross-eyed terror. He shrieked again, and the crotch of his army fatigue pants darkened. He stuck his fingers into his mouth as if to stifle the sound he was making.
"A goose!"
he screamed through his mouthful of fingers.
"A Hunturian ala ghost!"
Lois ignored him and grabbed the barrel of the rifle. "Don't kill him, Ralph! Don't!" Ralph was suddenly furious with her, too. "Don't you understand, Lois? Don't you get it? He understood what he was doing. On some level, he did understand. I saw it in his goddamn aura." "It doesn't matter," she said, still holding the barrel of the rifle down so it pointed at the floor. "It doesn't matter what he did or didn't understand. We mustn't do what they do. We mustn't be what they are. But, Ralph, I want to let go of this gun barrel. It's hot. It's burning my fingers." "All right," he said, and let go at the same instant she did. The gun fell to the floor between them, and Pickering, who had been sliding slowly down the wall with his fingers still in his mouth and his shining glazed eyes still fixed on Lois, lunged for it with the speed of a striking rattlesnake. What Ralph did then, he did without forethought and certainly without anger. He acted purely on instinct, reaching out for Pickering with both hands and grasping the sides of his face. Something flashed brightly inside his mind as he did it, something that felt like the lens of a powerful magnifying glass. He slammed back up through the levels for a split second, going higher than either of them had yet been. At the height of his ascent, he felt a terrible force flash inside his head and explode down his arms. Then as he dropped back down, he heard the bang, a hollow but emphatic sound which was entirely different from the guns still firing outside. Pickering's body jerked galvanically, and his legs shot out with such force that one of his shoes flew off. His buttocks rose and then thumped down. His teeth clamped shut on his lower lip, and blood squirted out of his mouth. For a moment, Ralph was almost sure he saw tiny blue sparks snapping from the ends of his zany hair. Then they were gone, and Pickering slumped back against the wall. He stared at Ralph and Lois with eyes from which all concern had fled. Lois screamed. At first, Ralph thought she was screaming because of what he had done to Pickering. And then he saw she was beating at the top of her head. A piece of burning wallpaper had landed there, and her hair was on fire. He swept an arm around her, beat at the flames with his own hand, then covered her body with his as a fresh gust of rifle and shotgun fire hit the north wing. Ralph's free hand was splayed out against the wall, and he saw a bullet hole appear between the third and fourth fingers like a magic trick. "Go up, Lois! Go up! Right now!" They went up together, turning to colored smoke before Charlie Pickering's empty eyes, and then disappearing. "What did you do to him, Ralph? For a second you were gone. You were up, and then he... What did you do?" She was looking at Charlie Pickering with stunned horror. Pickering was sitting against the wall in almost exactly the same position as the two dead women in the next room. As Ralph watched, a large pinkish spit bubble appeared between his slack lips, grew, then popped. He turned to Lois, took her by the arms just above the elbows, and made a picture in his mind. The circuit breaker box in the basement of his house on Harris Avenue. Hands opened the box, then quickly flipped all the switches from on to off. He wasn't sure that this was right. It had all happened too fast for him to be sure of anything, but he thought it was close. Lois's eyes widened a little, and then she nodded. She looked at Pickering, then at Ralph. "He brought it on himself, didn't he? You didn't do it on purpose. Ralph nodded. And then fresh screams came up from below their feet. Screams he was quite sure he was not hearing with his ears. Lois? Yes, Ralph. Right now. He slipped his hands down her arms and gripped her hands as the four of them had held hands in the hospital. Only this time they went down instead of up, sliding into the plank floor as if it were a pool of water. Ralph was once again aware of a knife edge of darkness crossing his vision. And then they were in the cellar, sinking slowly down to a dirty cement floor. He saw shadowy furnace pipes, grimy with dust, a snowblower covered with a large sheet of dirty transparent plastic, gardening equipment lined up to one side of a dim cylinder that was probably the water heater, and cartons stacked against one brick wall. Soup, beans, spaghetti sauce, coffee, garbage bags, toilet tissue. All of these things looked slightly hallucinatory. Not quite there, and at first Ralph thought this was a new side effect of having gone to the next level. Then he realized it was just smoke. The cellar was filling up with it rapidly. There were 18 or 20 people clustered at one end of the long, shadowy room, most of them women. Ralph also saw a little boy of about 4, clinging to his mother's knees. Mommy's face showed the fading bruises of what might have been an accident, but was probably on purpose. A little girl, a year or two older, with her face pressed against her mother's stomach. And he saw Helen. She was holding Natalie in her arms and blowing into the baby's face as if she could keep the air around her clear of smoke that way. Nat was coughing and screaming in choked, desperate whoops. Behind the women and children, Ralph could make out a dusty set of steps climbing up into darkness. "Ralph, we have to go down now, don't we?" He nodded, made that blink inside his head, and suddenly he was also coughing as he pulled acrid smoke into his lungs. They materialized directly in front of the group at the foot of the stairs. But only the little boy with his arms around his mother's knees reacted. In that moment, Ralph was positive he had seen this kid somewhere before, but he had no idea where. The day near the end of summer when he'd seen him playing roll toss with his mother in Strawford Park was the furthest thing from his mind at that moment.
"Look, Mama," the boy said, pointing and coughing. "Angels!"
Inside his head, Ralph heard Clotho saying,
"We're no angels, Ralph."
And then he pushed forward toward Helen through the thickening smoke, still holding Lois's hand. His eyes were stinging and tearing already, and he could hear Lois coughing. Helen was looking at him with dazed unrecognition, looking at him the way she had on that day in August when Ed had beaten her so badly. "Helen!
Ralph!
Those stairs, Helen, where do they go?"
"What are you doing here, Ralph? How did you get it?"
She broke into a coughing spasm and doubled over. Natalie almost tumbled out of her arms, and Lois took the screaming child before Helen could drop her. Lois looked at the woman to Helen's left, saw she seemed even less aware of what was going on, then grabbed Helen again and shook her.
"Where do the stairs go?"
She glanced over her shoulder at them.
"Cellar bulkhead," she told him. "But that's no good, it's..."
She bent over, coughing dryly. The sound was weirdly like the chatter of Charlie Pickering's automatic weapon.
"It's locked," Helen finished. "The fat woman locked it. She had the lock in her pocket. I saw her put it on. Why did she do that, Ralph? How did she know we'd come down here?"
"Where else did you have to go?" Ralph thought bitterly, then turned to Lois.
"See what you can do, will you?"
"Okay." She handed him the screaming, coughing baby and pushed through the little crowd of women. Susan Day was not among them, so far as Ralph could see. At the far end of the cellar, a section of the floor fell in with a gush of sparks and a wave of baking heat. The girl, with her face buried against her mother's stomach, began to scream. Lois climbed 4 of the stairs, then reached up with her palms held out, like a minister giving a benediction. In the light of the swirling sparks, Ralph could dimly see the slanting shadow that was the bulkhead. Lois put her hands against it. For a moment, nothing happened, and then she flickered briefly out of existence in a rainbow swirl of colors. Ralph heard a sharp explosion that sounded like an aerosol can exploding in a hot fire, and then Lois was back. At the same moment, he thought he saw a pulse of white light from just above her head.
"What was that, Mama?"
asked the little boy, who had called Ralph and Lois angels.
"What was that?"
Before she could reply, a stack of curtains on a card table about 20 feet away whooshed into flame, painting the faces of the trapped women in stark Halloween shades of black and orange.
"Ralph!" Lois cried. "Help me!"
He pushed through the dazed women and climbed the stairs.
"What?"
His throat felt as if he'd been goggling with kerosene.
"Can't you get it?" "I got it. I felt the lock break. In my mind, I felt it. But this boogery door's too heavy for me. You'll have to do that part. Give me the baby."
He let her take Nat again, then reached up and tested the bulkhead. It was heavy, all right, but Ralph was running on pure adrenaline, and when he put his shoulders into it and shoved, it flew open. A flood of bright light and fresh air swept down the narrow stairwell. In one of Ralph's beloved films, such moments were usually greeted by screams of triumph and relief. But at first, none of the women who had been trapped down here made any sound at all. They only stood in silence, looking up with stunned faces at the rectangle of blue sky Ralph had conjured in the roof of the room most of them had accepted as their grave. "And what will they say later?" he wondered. "If they really do survive this, what will they say later? That a skinny man with bushy eyebrows and a lady on the stout side, but with beautiful Spanish eyes, materialized in the cellar, broke the lock on the bulkhead door, and led them to safety?" He looked down and saw the strangely familiar little boy looking back up at him with large, grave eyes. There was a hook-shaped scar across the bridge of the boy's nose. Ralph had an idea that this kid was the only one who had really seen them, even after they had dropped back down to the short-time level, and Ralph knew perfectly well what he would say, that angels had come, a man-angel and a lady-angel, and they had saved them. Should make for an interesting sidebar on the news tonight, Ralph thought. Yes, indeed, Lizette Benson and John Kirkland would love it. Lois slapped her hand against one of the support posts. Come on, you guys. Get going before the fire gets to the furnace oil tanks. The woman with the little girl moved first. She hoisted her crying child into her arms and staggered upstairs, coughing and weeping. The others began to follow. The little boy looked up at Ralph admiringly as his mother led him past.
Cool, man, he said.
Ralph grinned at him. He couldn't help it. Then turned to Lois and pointed up the stairs. If I'm not all turned around in my head, that comes out behind the house. Don't let them go around to the front yet. The cops are apt to blow half of them away before they realize they're shooting the people they came to save. All right, she said. Not a single question, not another word. And Ralph loved her for that. She went up the stairs at once, pausing only to shift Nat and grab one woman by the elbow when she stumbled. Now only Ralph and Helen Deepnow were left.
Was that Lois? She asked him.
Yes.
She had Natalie?
Yes. Another large chunk of the cellar's roof fell in. More sparks whooshed up, and runners of fire went racing nimbly along the overhead beams toward the furnace.
Are you sure?
She clutched at his shirt and looked at him with frantic, swollen eyes.
Are you sure she had Nat?
Positive. Let's go now. Helen looked around and seemed to count in her head. She looked alarmed.
Gretchen, she exclaimed. And Merrily! We have to get Merrily, Ralph. She's 7 months pregnant.
She's up there, Ralph said, grabbing Helen's arm when she showed signs of wanting to leave the foot of the stairs and go back into the burning cellar. She and Gretchen both. Is that everyone else?
Yes, I think so.
Good. Come on. We're getting out of here. Ralph and Helen stepped out of the bulkhead in a cloud of dark gray smoke, looking like the conclusion of a world-class illusionist's best trick. They were indeed in back of the house, near the clotheslines. Dresses, slacks, underwear, and bed linen flapped in the freshening breeze. As Ralph watched, a flaming shingle landed on one of the sheets and set it ablaze. More flames were billowing out of the kitchen windows. The heat was intense. Helen sagged against him, not unconscious but simply used up for the time being. Ralph had to grab her around the waist to keep her from falling to the ground. She clawed weakly at the back of his neck, trying to say something about Natalie. Then she saw her in Lois's arms and relaxed a little. Ralph got a better grip on her and half-carried, half-dragged her away from the bulkhead. As he did, he saw the remains of what looked like a brand-new padlock on the ground beside the open door. It was split into two pieces and oddly twisted, as if immensely powerful hands had torn it apart. The women were about 40 feet away, huddled at the corner of the house. Lois was facing them, talking to them, keeping them from going any farther. Ralph thought that with a little preparation and a little luck, they would be okay when they did. The firing from the police strong point hadn't stopped, but it had slackened off considerably.
Pickering!
It sounded like Lydecker, although the amplification of the bullhorn made it impossible to be sure.
Why don't you be smart for once in your life and come out while you still can?
More sirens were approaching, the distinctive watery wobble of an ambulance among them. Ralph led Helen to the other women. Lois handed Natalie back to her, then turned in the direction of the amplified voice and cupped her hands around her mouth.
Hello!
She screamed.
Hello out there! Can you...
She stopped, coughing so hard she was nearly retching, doubled over with her hands on her knees and tears squirting from her smoke-irritated eyes. Lois, are you okay? Ralph asked. From the corner of his eye, he saw Helen covering the face of the exalted and revered baby with kisses. Fine, she said, wiping her cheeks with her fingers. It's the damn smoke, that's all. She cupped her hands around her mouth again.
Can you hear me?
The firing had died down to a few isolated handgun pops. Still, Ralph thought, just one of those little pops in the wrong place might be enough to get an innocent woman killed.
Lydecker!
He yelled, cupping his own hands around his mouth.
John Lydecker!
There was a pause, and then the amplified voice gave a command that gladdened Ralph's heart.
Stop firing!
One more pop, then silence except for the sound of the burning house.
Who's talking to me? Identify yourselves!
But Ralph thought he had enough problems without adding that to them.
The women are back here!
He yelled, now having to fight a need to cough himself.
I'm sending them around to the front! No, don't!
Lydecker responded.
There's a man with a gun in the last room on the ground floor. He shot several people already.
One of the women moaned at this and put her hands over her face. Ralph cleared his burning throat as best he could. At that moment, he believed he would have swapped his whole retirement fund for one ice-cold bottle of Coke, and screamed back,
Don't worry about Pickering! Pickering's!
But what exactly was Pickering? That was a damn good question, wasn't it?
Mr. Pickering is unconscious. That's why he stopped shooting.
Lois screamed from beside him. Ralph didn't think unconscious really covered it, but it would do.
The women are coming around the side of the house with their hands up. Don't shoot. Tell us you won't shoot.
There was a moment of silence. Then,
We won't. But I hope you know what you're talking about, lady.
Ralph nodded at the mother of the little boy. Go on now. You two can lead the parade. Are you sure they won't hurt us? The fading bruises on the young woman's face, a face which Ralph also found vaguely familiar, suggested that questions of who would or who would not hurt her and her son formed a vital part of her life. Are you sure? Yes, Lois said, still coughing and leaking around the eyes. Just put your hands up. You can do that, can't you, big boy? The kid shot his hands up with the enthusiasm of a veteran cops and robbers player. But his shining eyes never left Ralph's face. Pink roses, Ralph thought. If I could see his aura, that's what color it would be. He wasn't sure if that was intuition or memory, but he knew it was so. What about the people inside? Another woman asked. What if they shoot? They had guns. What if they shoot? There won't be any more shooting from in there, Ralph said. Go on now. The little boy's mother gave Ralph another doubtful look, then looked down at her son. Ready, Pat? Yes, Pat said and grinned. His mother nodded and raised one hand. The other she curled around his shoulders in a frail gesture of protection that touched Ralph's heart. They walked around the side of the house that way.
Don't hurt us, she cried. Our hands are up, and my little boy is with me, so don't hurt us.
The others waited a moment, and then the woman who had put her hands to her face went. The one with the little girl joined her. The child was in her arms now, but holding her hands obediently in the air just the same. The others followed along, most coughing, all with their empty hands held high. When Helen started to fall in at the end of the parade, Ralph touched her shoulder. She looked up at him, her reddened eyes both calm and wondering.
That's the second time you've been there when Nat and I needed you, she said. Are you our guardian angel, Ralph?
Maybe, he said. Maybe I am. Listen, Helen, there isn't much time. Gretchen is dead. She nodded and began to cry.
I knew it. I didn't want to, but somehow I did just the same.
I'm very sorry.
We were having such a good time when they came. I mean, we were nervous, but there was also a lot of laughing and a lot of chatter. We were going to spend the day getting ready for the speech tonight. The rally and Susan Day's speech.
It's tonight I have to ask you about, Ralph said, speaking as gently as he could. Do you think they'll still...
We were making breakfast when they came.
She spoke as if she hadn't heard him. Ralph supposed she hadn't. Nat was peeking over Helen's shoulder, and although she was still coughing, she had stopped crying. Safe within the circle of her mother's arms, she looked from Ralph to Lois and then back to Ralph again with lively curiosity.
Helen, Lois began. Look, see there?
Helen pointed to an old brown Cadillac parked beside the ramshackle shed, which had been the cider press in the days when Ralph and Carolyn had occasionally come out here. It had probably served High Ridge as a garage. The caddy was in bad shape. Cracked windshield, dented rocker panels, one headlight crisscrossed with masking tape. The bumper was layered with pro-life stickers.
That's the car they came in. They drove around to the back of the house as if they meant to put it in our garage. I think that's what fooled us. They drove right around to the back as if they belonged here.
She contemplated the car for a moment, then returned her smoke-reddened, unhappy eyes to Ralph and Lois.
Somebody should have paid attention to the stickers on the damn thing.
Ralph suddenly thought of Barbara Richards back at Woman Care. Bobby Richards, who had relaxed when Lois approached. It hadn't mattered to her that Lois was reaching for something in her purse. What had mattered was that Lois was a woman. Sandra McKay had been driving the Cadillac. Ralph didn't need to ask Helen to know that. They had seen the woman and ignored the bumper stickers. We are family. I've got all my sisters with me. When Deanie said the people getting out of the car were dressed in army clothes and carrying guns, we thought it was a joke. All of us but Gretchen, that is. She told us to get downstairs as quick as we could. Then she went into the parlor to call the police, I suppose.
I should have stayed with her.
No, Lois said, and slipped a lock of Natalie's fine-spun auburn hair through her fingers. You had this one to look out for, didn't you? And still do.
I suppose, she said dully, I suppose I do. But she was my friend, Lois. My friend.
I know, dear. Helen's face twisted like a rag, and she began to cry. Natalie looked at her mother with an expression of comical astonishment for a moment, and then she began to cry, too.
Helen, Ralph said, Helen, listen to me. I have something to ask you. It's very, very important. Are you listening?
Helen nodded, but she went on crying. Ralph had no idea if she was really hearing him or not. He glanced at the corner of the building, wondering how long it would be before the police charged around it, then took a deep breath. Do you think there's any chance that they'll still hold the rally tonight? Any chance at all? You were as close to Gretchen as anybody. Tell me what you think. Helen stopped crying and looked at him with still wide eyes, as if she couldn't believe what she had just heard. Then those eyes began to fill with a frightening depth of anger. How can you ask? How can you even ask? Well, because... He stopped, unable to go on. Ferocity was the last thing he had expected. If they stop us now, they win, Helen said. Don't you see that? Gretchen's dead, Merrily's dead, High Ridge is burning to the ground with everything some of these women own inside, and if they stop us now, they win. One part of Ralph's mind, a deep part, now made a terrible comparison. Another part, one that loved Helen, moved to block it, but it moved too late. Her eyes looked like Charlie Pickering's eyes when Pickering had been sitting next to him in the library, and there was no reasoning with a mind that could make eyes look like that. If they stop us now, they win, she screamed. In her arms, Natalie began to cry harder. Don't you get it? Don't you fucking get it? We'll never let that happen. Never, never, never. Abruptly, she raised the hand she wasn't using to hold the baby and went around the corner of the building. Ralph reached for her and touched the back of her blouse with his fingertips. That was all. Don't shoot me! Helen was crying at the police on the other side of the house. Don't shoot me! I'm one of the women! I'm one of the women! I'm one of the women! Ralph lunged after her. No thought, just instinct. And Lois seized him by the back of his belt. Better not go out there, Ralph. You're a man, and they might think, Hello, Ralph. Hello, Lois. They both turned toward this new voice. Ralph recognized it at once, and he felt both surprised and not surprised. Standing beyond the clotheslines, with their freight of flaming sheets and garments, wearing a pair of faded flannel pants and an old pair of Converse high tops, which had been mended with electrician's tape, was Dorrance Marsteller. His hair, as fine as Natalie's, but white instead of auburn, blew about his head in the October wind which combed the top of this hill. As usual, he had a book in one hand. Come on, you two, he said, waving to them and smiling. Hurry up, and hurry along. There's not much time. Led them down a weedy, little-used path that meandered away from the house in a westerly direction. It wound first through a fair-sized garden plot from which everything had been harvested but the pumpkins and squashes, then into an orchard where the apples were just coming to full ripeness, then through a dense blackberry tangle where thorns seemed to reach out everywhere to snag their clothes. As they passed out of the blackberry brambles and into a gloomy stand of old pines and spruces, it occurred to Ralph that they must be on the Newport side of the ridge now. Dorrance walked briskly for a man of his years, and the placid smile never left his face. The book he carried was For Love, Poems 1950-1960, by a man named Robert Creeley. Ralph had never heard of him, but supposed Mr. Creeley had never heard of Elmore Leonard, Ernest Haycox, or Louis L'Amour either. He only tried to talk to Old Dor once, when the three of them finally reached the foot of a slope made slick and treacherous with pine needles. Just ahead of them, a small stream foamed coldly past. Dorrance, what are you doing out here? How did you get here, for that matter? And where the hell are we going? Oh, I hardly ever answer questions, Old Dor replied, smiling widely. He surveyed the stream, then raised one finger and pointed at the water. A small brown trout jumped into the air, flipped bright drops from its tail, and fell back into the water again. Ralph and Lois looked at each other with identical, "Did I just see what I thought I saw?" expressions. "Nope, nope," Dor continued, stepping off the bank and onto a wet rock. "Hardly ever. Too difficult.
Too many possibilities. Too many levels. Eh, Ralph? The world is full of levels, isn't it? How are you, Lois?
Fine, she said absently, watching Dorrance cross the stream on a number of conveniently placed stones. He did it with his arms held out to either side, a posture which made him look like the world's oldest acrobat. Just as he reached the far bank, there was a violent exhalation from the ridge behind them. Not quite an explosion. There go the oil tanks, Ralph thought. Dor turned to face them from the other side of the brook, smiling his placid Buddha smile. Ralph went up this time, without any conscious intention of doing so, and without that sense of a blink inside his mind. Color rushed into the day, but he barely noticed. All his attention was fixed on Dorrance, and for a space of almost 10 seconds, he forgot to breathe. Ralph had seen auras of many shades in the last month or so, but none even remotely approached the splendid envelope that enclosed the old man Don Veazey had once described as nice as hell, but really sort of a fool. It was as if Dorrance's aura had been strained through a prism, or a rainbow. He tossed off light in dazzling arcs, blue followed by magenta, magenta followed by red, red followed by pink, pink followed by the creamy yellow-white of a ripe banana. He felt Lois's hand groping for his and unfolded it.
My God, Ralph, do you see? Do you see how beautiful he is?
I sure do.
What is he? Is he even human? I don't know.
Stop it, both of you. Come back down.
Dorrance was still smiling, but the voice they heard in their heads was commanding and not a bit vague. And before Ralph could consciously think himself down, he felt a push. The colors and the heightened quality of the sounds dropped out of the day at once.
There's no time for that now, Dor said. Why, it's noon already.
Noon? Lois asked. It can't be. It wasn't even 9 when we got here, and that can't have been half an hour ago.
Time goes faster when you're high, old Dor said.
He spoke solemnly, but his eyes twinkled.
Just ask anyone drinking beer and listening to country music on Saturday night. Come on, hurry up. The clock is ticking. Cross the stream.
Lois went first, stepping carefully from stone to stone with her arms held out, as Dorrance had done. Ralph followed with his hands poised to either side of her hips, ready to catch her if she showed signs of wavering. But he was the one who ended up almost tumbling in. He managed to avoid it, but only at the cost of wetting 1 foot all the way to the ankle. It seemed to him that some place in the far reaches of his head, he could hear Carolyn laughing merrily.
"Can't you tell us anything, Dor?" he asked as they reached the far side. "We're pretty lost here." And not just mentally or spiritually either, he thought. He'd never been in these woods in his life, not even hunting partridge or deer as a young man. If the path they were on petered out, or if old Dor lost whatever passed for his bearings, what then?
Yes, Dor responded at once.
I can tell you one thing, and it's absolutely for sure.
What?
These are the best poems Robert Creeley ever wrote, old Dor said, holding up his copy of For Love,
and before either of them could respond to that, he turned around and once again began tracing his way along the faint path which ran west through the woods. Ralph looked at Lois. Lois looked back at him, equally at a loss. Then she shrugged.
Come on, old buddy, she said. We better not lose him now. I forgot the breadcrumbs.
They climbed another hill, and from the top of it Ralph could see that the path they were on led down to an old woods road with a strip of grass running up the middle. It dead-ended in an overgrown gravel pit, about 50 yards farther along. There was a car idling just outside the entrance to the pit, a perfectly anonymous late-model Ford, which Ralph nevertheless felt he knew. When the door opened and the driver got out, everything fell into place. Of course he knew the car. He had last seen it from Lois's living room window on Tuesday night. Then it had been slewed around in the middle of Harris Avenue, with the driver kneeling in the glow of the headlights.
kneeling beside the dying dog he had struck. Joe Weiser heard them coming, looked up, and waved.